quer saber de que forma a ciência e a tecnologia estão a alterar, melhorar ou até piorar as nossas vidas, está no sítio certo. Hoje temos connosco John Grant Cumming, engenheiro britânico que é o CTO da gigante da internet Cloudflare. Bem-vindos ao podcast do Dinheiro Vivo, Made in Tech.
Can you believe it? Can you realize that we, that all of us, have actually begun the exploration of another world?
Olá, eu sou o João Tomé e neste 11º episódio do Made in Tech, depois de um episódio sobre o espaço, este de 5 de fevereiro de 2021, é para aprofundar um dos temas mais importantes da era em que vivemos, a internet como um todo. E para isso temos um verdadeiro especialista nesta área. O engenheiro britânico John Grant Cumming é o CTO da Cloudflare já há alguns anos. A Cloudflare, só para ter uma noção, é uma das empresas mais importantes da internet, dá uma base que dá rapidez, eficiência e também segurança a 12% dos sites e apps do mundo. Portanto, muitos milhões de sites e apps em todo o mundo dependem deste serviço. Muitas em Portugal, claro. Se com ele falamos de várias tendências, isto porque a Cloudflare disponibilizou uma espécie de radar, ele chama Radar, um site que permite ver as tendências de utilização da internet em várias cidades do mundo. Lisboa é uma delas. E nós falamos aqui um bocadinho sobre estas tendências associadas à pandemia no ano 2020 em Portugal, neste caso mais focadas em Lisboa. Vemos pormenores curiosos, como por exemplo que no verão as pessoas ao sair da cidade usam menos a internet na cidade. Portanto, há assim pequenos pormenores, onde também é possível ver os sites mais importantes, mais relevantes, o tipo de sites mais utilizados durante o confinamento, por exemplo. Há algumas tendências curiosas, falamos com ele. Acabamos por não explorar muito com ele uma das críticas que a Cloudflare fez ao Estado português. A Cloudflare, só para terem noção, é uma empresa que chegou a Portugal em 2019, criou cá um centro técnico. Portugal ganhou uma espécie de concurso mundial, ou melhor, europeu, para ter este centro técnico e conseguiu. Portanto, desde 2019 que esse centro técnico existe. Neste momento já tem cerca de 100 pessoas, engenheiros, especialmente engenheiros, mas não só, a trabalhar cá. E é possível que nos próximos anos o número suba até aos às mil pessoas a trabalhar por cá, neste centro técnico. E nessa transição para Portugal, o John Grant Cumming veio viver para Portugal precisamente em 2019 e fala-nos também dessa experiência. Portanto, ele passou este confinamento por cá, a viver por cá e a trabalhar por cá em teletrabalho. Falamos depois, por exemplo, de alguns outros pormenores, como o papel dúbio às vezes que estas empresas têm quando podem, por exemplo, travar sites nazis, sites radicais. A Cloudflare já se viu nessa situação. Falamos também o que é que se deve fazer, se os Estados devem intervir mais ou não, e também sobre a burocracia no Estado. Vamos ter um episódio só sobre a burocracia no Estado, e vamos focar-nos precisamente sobre isso, mas no ano passado, a Cloudflare, no final do ano passado, o CEO da Cloudflare criticou o Estado português por um excesso de burocracia e o governo português não dar apoio a que as empresas resolvam esse excesso de burocracia sem critério. É assim que eles diziam. Não abordamos muito esse tema aqui nesta entrevista, vamos falar num outro episódio, portanto não vou alongar sobre ele, mas é um tema muito interessante e que afeta todos os portugueses, a burocracia sem critério no Estado. Falamos depois também um bocadinho sobre os hackers e sobre o VPN para as empresas ser mais inseguro, por exemplo, do que os sistemas chamados Zero Trust, que estão a crescer. Falamos um pouco também sobre concorrência, enfim, falamos de alguns temas. Ele não quis abordar connosco um dos temas da semana relacionado com o Tim Cook e o Facebook. Vamos guardar isso para a semana tecnológica, que é já de seguida. Portanto, começamos desde já a fazer o resumo da semana tecnológica. Houve muito para falar esta semana, muitas coisas interessantes, e começamos precisamente com a polémica guerra entre a Apple e o Facebook. Está-se a intensificar. Tim Cook, na quinta-feira da semana passada, embora só esta semana é que ganhou uma amplitude maior, fez várias críticas a serviços como o Facebook, disse tudo aquilo que o Facebook não quer ouvir. Basicamente disse que estas plataformas que estão a usar os dados dos utilizadores têm algoritmos que estão a prejudicar os utilizadores, a radicalizá-los, só para ganharem mais algum dinheiro. E, portanto, ele aí é muito claro que explica que a própria Apple está a tentar tomar medidas em tentar evitar que isso aconteça, mas também fala que os Estados também devem ter um papel importante nesse domínio. E a guerra da Apple com o Facebook intensifica-se não só por estas declarações polémicas, ele diz mesmo a certa altura que estas plataformas, como o Facebook e os algoritmos, colocam-nos num dilema social que não podemos ignorar sob pena de se transformar numa catástrofe social e que vai afetar as democracias. Do ponto de vista da Apple, eles estão a fazer uma coisa, vão implementar, entretanto, uma coisa que o Facebook está completamente contra. Estima-se que as mudanças no sistema operativo iOS, em que vai começar a fazer com que os utilizadores aprovem, têm de dar permissão para empresas como o Facebook usem dados desses mesmos utilizadores, dado a dado, portanto, é uma informação explícita, clara, não é os termos e condições muito longos. E aí essa mudança, só o facto dos utilizadores passarem a ter de aprovar ou não a cedência de dados ao Facebook de uma forma direta, estima-se que pode impactar o negócio do Facebook, as receitas, em 10%. Daí esta ser uma guerra também financeira muito curiosa. Do ponto de vista de notícias da semana, destacaríamos também a empresa de votos eletrónicos Smartmatic, que está a acusar em tribunal Trump e os seus advogados, bem como a Fox News, de prejudicar a empresa com acusações de fraude eleitoral. E, de facto, é um processo de vários mil milhões de dólares que pode ter aqui consequências importantes. Outra notícia curiosa é que a Dinamarca aprovou um plano para construir uma ilha artificial no Mar do Norte para produzir energia verde e dar eletricidade a 3 milhões de europeus. Uma medida curiosa. A Google, curiosamente, também está a aprovar uma medida para evitar o tracking, a tal uso de dados pessoais de forma pouco clara, nos sistemas Android. Portanto, seguindo aqui o exemplo da Apple. Há uma outra guerra a decorrer, e neste caso na Austrália, é a Google, que já ameaçou várias vezes que pode sair com o seu motor de busca da Austrália se as novas leis se mantiverem no país. Estas novas leis do governo australiano indicam que estas empresas, Google e Facebook, mas aqui muito focado também na Google, têm de pagar novas taxas e impostos que permitem suportar os meios de comunicação locais e não só. Entretanto, esta semana a Microsoft respondeu às ameaças da Google, indicando que está totalmente disponível a colocar o seu motor de busca Bing a pagar esses mesmos impostos, com gosto, sem nenhum problema. Esta semana, Jeff Bezos também anunciou que no verão vai sair da liderança executiva da Amazon. Ela vai passar para Andy Jassy, que é tão só como responsável do Amazon Web Services, a área de cloud da Amazon, que tem crescido vertiginosamente e, portanto, um homem tecnológico que vai ali passar a liderar de uma forma executiva a Amazon. O que é que Jeff Bezos vai fazer? Vai seguir o caminho de Bill Gates e Larry Page, na Microsoft e Google, respectivamente. Vai, provavelmente, dedicar-se a outras áreas, evitando aqui o lado de maior responsabilidade de um CEO. E, no caso de Bezos, vai fazer aquilo que Elon Musk também já fez, que é dedicar-se cada vez mais ao espaço, à sua empresa Blue Origin. Outra notícia curiosa esta semana está relacionada com os pequenos investidores. Eles continuam, através de plataformas como Reddit, a conseguirem alterar os preços de ações e, neste caso, da prata. Começou assim no início da semana. Já para o final da semana, essas influências já eram menos visíveis, mas há aqui uma guerra interessante também entre os pequenos investidores contra os chamados Golias de Wall Street. A Apple também, entretanto, não anunciou oficialmente, mas soube-se que deverá investir, assinar um acordo com o grupo da Hyundai e Kia para investir 3 mil milhões numa fábrica, na produção, nos meios de produção, para fazer o seu carro Apple até 2025. Será elétrico, autónomo, uma autonomia perto dos 500 km para podermos circular sem problemas, sem necessidade de carregamento, e como chefe de projeto deste carro vai estar o chefe de projeto do Porsche Cayenne. Portanto, provavelmente o carro da Apple vai ter aqui um lado de Porsche. Google também anunciou os seus resultados de 2020, neste caso o último trimestre do ano. Cresceu 23% em receitas, bateu as expectativas, portanto um crescimento incrível durante a pandemia, e também pela primeira vez, isto é um dado bastante importante, mostrou os dados relacionados com a área da cloud. E curiosamente teve perdas de 5,5 mil milhões de dólares, mas está a crescer todos os anos de forma vertiginosa. Portanto, há aqui um investimento grande, uma perda de dinheiro, mas um crescimento também grande. E portanto, mostra claramente aqui a tendência da Google sair cada vez mais das receitas de publicidade vindas, por exemplo, do motor de busca, passando cada vez mais para as receitas da cloud. E pronto, está feito o resumo da semana. Segue então a entrevista com o CTO da Cloudflare, John Graham Cumming.
Hi, John. Thank you for being in our podcast. Where does this podcast find you?
In Lisbon.
In Lisbon. Of course, there's an office from Cloudflare here, and you are working from here, and you didn't left for all this pandemic year?
Well, no. Oh, well, I mean, I live in Lisbon, right? So this is, of course, yeah. this is my home. And so, you know, I did go to Australia. That was last February. I think that's the last time I went anywhere significant. I've been here in Portugal the whole time.
And so far, a good experience, even not going back to the UK, right?
Because yeah, I mean, it's been a good experience. Obviously, you know, every country has been living through sort of the same thing at different times. So here we are with a peak of cases in Portugal right now, and so it's rough. But we had many months when I could get a haircut. So, you know, I mean, we take it as it comes and goes. But I'm very happy to be here.
Of course, we would like to talk to you about Cloudflare's Radar 2020 years in review. Of course, it was a big year in terms of the internet. A lot of more usage, more people going to the internet for the first time. Or in terms of focusing on Portugal, what does your review show us in terms of behavior?
Well, if you didn't know what had happened in 2020 and you looked at the graph of internet traffic, what you would say is, what happened in March? Because the internet was humming along in Portugal at a fairly steady level up until the beginning of March, when suddenly it jumped up, and it jumped up very, very rapidly, very steep increase to a growth of something like 30% more than normal. As we saw it, which is pretty tremendous. You know, internet use grows slowly over time as more people use it for more things, as more people get online. But this was suddenly, and it's pretty much stayed there. Interestingly, you might also say to yourself, if you looked at the graph, what happened in May? And so what's interesting about the graph is you can clearly see the beginning of the lockdown, the confinement last March. You can also see the point at which we started to ease off. If you remember, in the middle of May, things started to ease off. People went back to the office a little bit. You could go to different sorts of shops. But the big story in Portugal and everywhere else is that around March time, internet use just rocketed and has pretty much stayed there ever since.
Of course, yeah. And it was all over the world, of course, this booming of usage on the internet.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Everywhere, essentially. Yeah.
And what we can see with the graph, of course, people at home cannot see that, but we can talk about it, is, like you said, great margins, double the size that it was pre-pandemic, even in the summer. And then when we enter in late September, October, with new measures also, there was a booming also there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can really clearly see, I think, the period where people did take a little bit of holiday, the period where people did actually get to go back to the office, and the periods where lockdowns happened and people were, you know, back at home. And you can see those trends in 2020. And you see a similar pattern in any country, that had lockdowns. The internet was the thing that people relied on.
Of course, even in terms of types of websites that saw the most traffic, we can see good different trends going up in March and April, entertainment, messaging, education, right? Commerce.
Yes. Yes. I mean, one of the things that's interesting, if we have a little slider on here where you can sort of scroll around and you can see you know, the different things that happened. I mean, if you go back to sort of March, April of last year, there's lots of things happened. One, you know, one of them was, you know, people were figuring out what to do about education or entertaining children. Another one was how all the different sort of online messaging systems work. You know, if you remember, people were out desperately trying to buy webcams. And, you know, if you went into Wharton near me, you couldn't get one, you know, because it was just, you know, those things were difficult. So you really saw that, and you saw a drop off in, well, guess what? Travel. You know, people weren't traveling anywhere.
Of course.
You know, people weren't buying houses or cars. You know, all these things kind of got cut back. So you saw in the trends on the internet really just reflecting what people were doing. And, you know, to be honest with you, this is what the internet is, right? It reflects us. You know, that's why it goes quiet at night when we go to sleep. That's why it gets busy in the morning when we wake up. And, you know, you see that in the big trends and also the, you know, the area trends.
Another area that is available for people to see is the amount of cyber attacks that were most widespread. Do Portugal has a trend in terms of types of cyber attacks?
Well, not really. That's any different sort of to the rest of the world. I mean, the thing that's significant is that, you know, there's this old joke about, you know, why do people rob banks? Well, that's because that's where the money is. You know, why are there cyber attacks? Well, that's because people are using the internet more. You know, criminals will go where there is money, or where there are things, you know, where they can do their illegal business. And so as we moved more and more onto the internet, criminals started to attack us more. And in particular, if you go back to March, April, and you think back to that time, there was just this tremendous amount of confusion, wasn't there, about what am I doing? How am I logging into my business if I'm still working? What are my children doing? And, you know, when people get confused like that or stressed, that's a ripe environment for, you know, criminals to take advantage of our weakness.
We talked in April about this, and you talked a lot about phishing, more phishing on the internet, yep. The links that people receive on SMS or messages, emails, yep. To push them and go to websites. It's a big tendency with more people online, probably people that didn't use the internet before. It's one of the dangers that we are seeing more and more now, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think phishing was and continues to be a very popular thing because, you know, it's just tricking people into making a mistake, isn't it? So I think that was very popular. It was also very popular for trying to break into companies, right? As if employees got sent home, then they might be told to log into things in a different way than they ever had done in the past because now they weren't in the office. And, you know, lo and behold, what does that mean? Well, you know, they try to get phished. I mean, that's what people try to do. So, yeah, phishing was a very, very important one. The other one really, really big was ransomware. Mm-hmm. You know, just, you know, companies were doing everything online. And then, well, guess what? If you can lock up their systems, then they're in big trouble. And so ransomware was very, very popular.
I've seen a paper about it in terms of companies should do backups because of that, in order to not lose their data. If someone hacks the systems, if they have a backup, it helps, right?
Well, I mean, I hope companies do backups anyway.
Of course, yeah.
and they didn't.
Not only because of that.
Not only because of that, but yes, I mean, that is certainly a situation. Of course, we did see some ransomware attacks where they went after the backups as well, which is really quite scary. So, you know, ransomware was certainly something that was very popular too.
The year in your review radar that you put available also shows cities of the world and the usage change in those cities. And we can see Lisbon there. There's the change. We can see the graph changing of high usage in some areas.
Yes. I mean, in general, what you see, of course, is that people were not going into offices. So areas where you had offices, people were not using the internet there anymore, and therefore there was, you know, less usage from those areas. And then more residential areas, and in particular in the countryside, saw more internet use because people had gone to maybe, you know, at their parents' home, or maybe a second home, or maybe they were just staying at home and using the internet from there. And so we certainly saw that. And actually, you can see a little bit of a trend towards people going towards the coast as the summer arrives, because they wanted to get away from the city.
Exactly. Even June to August, we can see that the usage of internet in Lisbon is in all-time lows. People left Lisbon altogether, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, sort of not really a surprise, right? You're talking comparing August to June. So, you know, kids were having schooling happening, and then August, you're in the depth of summer, and you see that Lisbon itself was quiet. And of course, there were no tourists this year as well, who might compensate for that.
Exactly.
So you're really seeing the movement of people who live in Portugal.
There's another topic that I think is interesting to talk about. We talked before about internet in Portugal. You said that it has a good level, even to attract people out from outside from Portugal to come here and work remote working. Do you think this year the infrastructure in Portugal held up nicely in terms of?
Yes, it definitely did. I mean, it also held up most places pretty well, because the internet was something that can scale fairly well with changing demand, because it does that every day, right? Because, you know, we use the internet during the day, and maybe we come home and at night we suddenly go on Netflix, for example, and we use a lot of internet. And so, you know, it's one of those things where the internet already had a lot of flexibility built into it. The good thing in Portugal is there is a lot of fiber optics. Mm-hmm. And there's two things you want in terms of internet connection. You want to have high bandwidth, and you want to have low latency. And you know, the fiber gives you the high bandwidth, which is really important for situations where, you know, everyone's now at home, the kids are doing remote schooling, everyone's doing Zoom calls from home, that kind of stuff. And the other thing is, fiber tends to be more symmetric than DSL. So what I mean by that is the upload speed tend to be very good as well. And that's important because, you know, mostly people download more than they upload. You know, you think watching a movie on Netflix or something, right? Mm-hmm. However, if you start people working at home, and in particular doing lots of video calls, now they're uploading a lot because they're uploading their own video. And so you need symmetry. So no, I think the infrastructure in Portugal, has been something that works extremely well. And, you know, we should be happy about that. Clearly, if you're in some rural areas, it might not have been so good, but in general, actually, it's pretty good.
Well, it's good good to know, of course. In terms of the your role here in Portugal, of Cloudflare's role, you have servers here, you have an office, a technical office here. It's growing. We talked this before. It's growing every year.
Yes.
So in terms of the 2024 Cloudflare in Lisbon, where do you how do you evaluate the presence in Portugal?
Well, so if you look back, we came to Portugal in 2019. With a very small number of people. We had basically 15 people here, pretty much all imported from outside of Portugal to get things going. We kept hiring through the pandemic. We absolutely kept going. There was no slowdown. In fact, you know, we got to something like close to 80 people in Lisbon by the end of 2020. And our plan is to go to something like 140 by the end of this year. So Lisbon, Cloudflare made this bet that Portugal and Lisbon were going to be a good location for a European technical office. What the company has discovered is this is a good location for a lot of other things too. So we've seen our HR department hire heavily here. We've seen our finance department hire here. And we're actually going to start hiring salespeople as well. So I think Lisbon was a good choice. And it proved itself through the pandemic. And we've really had a good time hiring a combination of people locally. There's a lot of local Portuguese people, quite a few people who are Portuguese who wanted to come back to Portugal. Mm-hmm. And we were able to offer them a job, of course. And then a mixture of all sorts of other nationalities, you know, French and Italian and Spanish, and, you know, all over the place.
In terms of Cloudflare, just to set a little lip up for people who don't know the company that well, it's one of the main companies that gives a basis for security, for quickness in terms of in usage of internet, of apps, of websites. It's one of the biggest in the world in terms of providing this service, security, quickness, and reliability. Is this a good way to sum it up?
Yes. I mean, what do we do is we provide service to about 25 million internet properties. So you think about, you know, websites, apps, the API for the app on your phone and things like that, and companies securing their own internal resources. And what we do is we make those things faster and we protect them from hackers. And the reality is you've probably used Cloudflare today without realizing it, because we have such a large customer base. That, you know, you will have visited a website or you will have used an app that we are protecting. And so, you know, we will have checked that you're not a hacker, let you through, and then we'll hopefully you weren't a hacker. And we will have speeded up the experience. And one of the ways we do that is we have our own hardware, our own servers in 200 cities worldwide. And Lisbon is one of those cities. We have a data center here. And so you will have been routed to the nearest data center in Portugal, almost certainly to Lisbon, and you know, we will have been able to serve you quickly, and hopefully, you know, that protects the customer, and you ended up with a great experience. And you know, the other side of it is, it's not just about the performance, but it's also about helping to keep things online when things are overloaded. And so we'll also do that to make sure things can cope with, you know, the load when maybe a popular game comes out or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I've read about some estimates of 12% of the internet websites have a basis from Cloudflare.
I'm not sure what the percentage is. I know that 16% of the Fortune 1000 uses us. Mm-hmm. It's a very large percentage.
Of course,
we handle something like 20 million HTTP requests per second. So it just gives you a sense of the sort of scale of what we're dealing with.
It's huge, really. And you have new services that you started to apply in 2020, right? New ways for companies and people to connect with your services, right?
Well, you know, at the beginning of 2020, we launched this thing called Cloudflare for Teams, which was to allow teams to sort of help do remote working, and, you know, allowed you to connect your internal resources and companies could then send people home, which was sort of incredibly fortuitous that we did it at that time. That became a thing called Cloudflare One, which allows businesses online. And so, yes, we launched those things, and then we launched a bunch of tools around privacy, because it's definitely the case that we think that individual user privacy is going to be enormous. If you think about GDPR and its impact, and you think about what Europe is doing with the Digital Services Act and Digital Markets Act, I think we just see that the world of personal privacy is here. So,
we talked with Vestager 2 weeks ago about it.
Yeah.
And she talked about the digital identity. People could take their identity from one company to the next, creating competitiveness. What do you think of the Digital Service Act in terms of giving the user more power to change their data to one company to another, even in terms of broader sense of privacy on the internet?
I think that privacy legislation is inevitable. And it's inevitable because we are using the internet for our entire lives, right? And you would have seen recently, you know, there was this big fuss about WhatsApp changing its privacy policy and what it was going to share in terms of information. And, you know, what did that do? It you know, supposedly millions of people, you know, switched off of WhatsApp. So you can see that it's in individuals' minds that their online privacy matters. And so governments are going to respond to that. And, you know, Europe will probably lead the way, but India, Brazil, China, even the US, certainly in California, and maybe at a federal level under Biden, are going to do things around individual user privacy. So it's just part of the way the internet is growing. And I think it's part of, in a sense, the internet growing up and to us mm-hmm. realizing it's an important part of our entire lives.
There's a lot of talk. You talked about the United States with Biden. There's a lot of talk because after the Capitol attack, Twitter, Facebook, but also Amazon Web Services reacted in some way. And in the case of Amazon Web Services, it was even to remove Parler from their services. You had a similar experience, I would say, with 8chan, with the websites that people consider to be damaging, that could promote violence in some way. What do you think of what happened, even in terms of Amazon Web Services removing the service to Parler? It was right to do so?
Well, I think the thing that's interesting is, you know, you saw quite a large group of people really sort of thanking Amazon for that and thinking that's the right thing to do. And then you had Angela Merkel and his government saying this is a dangerous precedent. And so it's interesting that, you know, you have these differences of opinion, and, you know, we have a process for working out differences of opinion. We have a political process and we have a judicial process, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to be very careful when we think about are things being done as a sort of response to kind of outrage and mobs, and are they being done in a thoughtful fashion? And because I think what will happen is that inevitably you end up with, you know, regulation around this to figure out what is the right answer. And so it's the other thing to consider is you think about a company like Cloudflare, which, you know, most people have never heard of. Most people don't know they interact with it because, you know, we're just checking they're not a hacker. If we choose to, you know, stop service to something, then, you know, potentially that thing goes offline, at least temporarily, as happened with the two websites that we stopped service to in the past. They both came back. And they're both out there. But there's something slightly disturbing about a piece of infrastructure deciding you shouldn't have access to something, or at least, you know, the service shouldn't be provided to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, without a legal base, right?
Well, you sort of imagine, you imagine a situation where, you know, there was a newspaper and the newspaper was being printed, and then the paper manufacturers said, we don't like that newspaper, we're not going to supply them with paper, but mm-hmm. you only know paper didn't come out. They'd be like, well, that's weird, you know, what's happening there, and should the paper manufacturer have that power? So I think mm-hmm. inevitably there, you know, this becomes a situation where there's regulation around it, and of course it will be different in different countries, so, you know, and it will be different depending on what sort of service you provide, right? If you are a piece of infrastructure, maybe you have to, you know, have a different standard than if you are, say, Facebook, which might be recommending content, which has impact in a way that, you know, a newspaper writing an editorial has a certain level of responsibility for what it says, mm-hmm. Or what it promotes. So I think this is just an area where, again, the internet is growing up, right? And so I think
legislation has to grow up too, right?
I think we just have to face these questions, and we have a system for doing that. We have a political system that it may sound funny for somebody from a Silicon Valley company to say, we think that the right answer is, you know, regulation or government action, but that's where legitimacy comes from, is from, you know, in democratic countries, from the government.
I talked with Vestager about it, even put the Angela Merkel not agreeing with removing someone from a platform like this. And she has a different answer than Angela Merkel, which I find is very interesting. She said platforms have rules, and if people don't comply by them, they have the power to remove the people from there. So she understands why inciting violence can be a way to take someone out, even if it's the president of the United States. But what she believes in terms of future legislation, and she's in a hurry, she wants the legislation to go through fast, although it's Europe, so we know things take time. But she thinks that creating an arbitration structure where people that feel that the company wasn't fair in some way, and an arbitration structure in each country that can analyze, given the rules, given the laws of the country, and see if that was a correct answer or not. That's the way she thinks Europe can go about, because she knows that there's content that is illegal, and she wants to online to take them out because it's illegal offline, so it has to be illegal online too. But there's harmful content that is not completely illegal, and platforms should have the rights to remove them, but should be obliged to be go to an arbitration process. What do you think about it?
Well, it may be that's the right thing to do. I mean, Facebook has this thing called the oversight board, right? Where they try to look at their own decisions, and you know.
Although it's them, it's from them, it's paid by them, so a little bit different.
It is from them, and in fact, when Cloudflare originally we stopped giving service to a website called Daily Stormer, which was a sort of very very right wing Nazi kind of thing, and you know. Which still exists, by the way. It came back online. It's not like, you know, we managed to delete it or something. Mm-hmm. You know, we at the time talked about, you know, there needs to be some way to sort of decide on these kind of decisions that's not just arbitrarily, you know, we decided to stop it. And so maybe, you know, maybe it's arbitration, maybe it's the courts. But that's for a political infrastructure to figure out what the right solution is. But something will happen. But the interesting thing is it will happen per country, mm-hmm. Because countries have different standards, they think is online and what is not online.
There was a lot of talk. We talked about hackers before. A lot of talk about the SolarWind attacks in the United States that put vulnerable big infrastructures of the state. Things that were completely hidden were probably in the hands now of Russian hackers. That's what most people think. I think you believe. What do you think about this type of attacks? We know, for example, that companies use a lot of, even in remote work, VPNs. There's a lot of talk about zero trust, a new way of, it's not new, but it's more used now, a new way of protecting the content inside companies. What do you think about this polar?
Well, I think that, you know, SolarWinds is an example of what we call a supply chain attack, which is, you know, if I can attack something that your business uses, I might be able to get into your business. And so, you know, anyone who's in a position where there's a lot of impact, if they are hacked, you know, has got to be doing a great job of protecting themselves. And one of the reasons why, you know, we worry about this at Cloudflare all the time is if you think about our 25 million internet properties, if you can get into us, you might be able to affect them or get customer information or something like that. So we have to care about it a lot. So in, where there are these sort of supply chain things, it's very important for companies to, you know, be thinking about that and how they protect them. On the other hand, this is one of a long line of hacks, right? This is, it was got a lot of news and it was quite dramatic, but it's still the same old stuff in the sense of someone breaking into a company through some, you know, weak link. And it really just goes back to, you know, companies have to protect themselves and they have to protect all of the business. It's a bit like, you know, you can't just lock the front door. You also need to close the windows at the back of the building, right? Because there are different ways to get in. And what you're alluding to, which is zero trust, is one component of that, which is to say that, you know, previously, when you went to the office and you logged into the corporate network with a PC on the desk, there was some sense that the network was trusted. You were inside the building. Maybe you had to go past the receptionist and show your badge. You know, you were inside this citadel, this castle. And that really died, that view of the world. And it died because of, you know, three things, really. First of all, you had SaaS applications, like we all started using the web for stuff that was on in the business, right? You know, businesses don't buy packaged software and install it anymore. They use services on the web, right? Mm-hmm. And then around 2006, 2007, you know, iPhone comes along and really shows that, you know, we're going to be using mobile and businesses are going to expect us to have mobile access to things. And Amazon comes along and says, don't bother renting, buying servers or storage, just rent it from us. All that stuff is on the internet fundamentally. And this mm-hmm. castle, you know, for over in São Jorge over there, you know, inside the castle walls, it just doesn't make any sense anymore because the people inside need access outside. And so the solution is to say, rather than keeping and trying to build the walls and adjust the walls, and VPNs are really just like trying to extend the walls of the castle out, right, aren't they, to where you are, is to say, the new network is the internet. What I need to do now is secure that environment. How do I do that? And this, that's what zero trust means. It means don't trust the network, or at least don't claim that the network gives you any special trust or special security. And so what do you do? Well, you have to figure out who is logging into your thing and do they have the right to do it? And what or where are they logging in from? So, you know, I do this every day, right, for Cloudflare. I have my laptop, which is in front of me right now, at home in Lisbon. I'm logging into systems on Cloudflare on the internet. I'm proving who I am, in my case, using a username and password and a physical hardware key, a YubiKey. Mm-hmm. Cloudflare, on the other hand, is looking, or at least our systems are saying, does John have access to this system? Is he authenticated correctly? And is he in the right place? So, for example, you know, I'm not saying that Spain is a dangerous country, but let's suppose I were to fly to Madrid, it would be feasible for Cloudflare to say he's not allowed to log in from Spain, right? They mm-hmm. might have limits on where I'm allowed to log in. And also, he's not allowed to log in from anything other than his own machine. And actually, his own machine has to have a certain level of security on it in terms of, let's say, antivirus and stuff like that. So Zero Trust pushes it to be an authentication and proving who you are problem, and also making sure the actual device and where that device is are trusted. And forget about
it. Can control everything in terms of trust, really.
Yep, that's right.
It's interesting because I see it and it's growing. Even companies are using it more. Even Google announced this week that beyond Corp Enterprise, their zero trust tools are now available for every company. Is this a competitor now, Google, because of this new area for you, for Cloudflare?
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, if you think about the major clouds, so like, you know, Google and Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. And Microsoft Azure, they're both partners and competitors, right? So we offer, you know, different, similar features. I mean, Amazon has a CDN. We certainly compete with them on that. You know, Microsoft and Google are partners of Cloudflare, but they offer overlapping services. So I think there's lots of overlapping things here. I think the interesting thing for us is that we are, you know, entirely, in a sense, independent. We can work with multiple of these things at the same time. And what we see from a zero trust perspective is that people want to work with, you know, they want to integrate many different things, many different applications into this one place. And it's not just about being Google or Amazon or Microsoft. It's about a very, very hybrid environment.
Makes sense. Even it's more, you have more security there because you have different types of companies that you worked with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of new services for Cloudflare, do you think this year could be a good year in new services, new highlights, growth? Where do you see in terms of technological advances Cloudflare going this year?
Well, we never slow down. So, you know, we're going to keep coming up with things that we think are good for our customers and expand our market. I mean, I can't pre-announce things that we're going to do this year, but you can kind of guess in the sense that, you know, what is our mission? Our mission is to help build a better internet. You make the internet more secure, faster, more reliable. We're all using the internet more. So what could that mean? Well, it would mean, you know, we need to bring our services to more areas, to more types of things that are connected to the internet. So we will continue in that direction, expanding as much as we can into the things that need to be reliable and secure and fast.
there's any type of new service, of course you cannot announce, but that you put more promise this year that excites you in some way?
Well, it's difficult to answer that without, you know,
revealing exactly
what it would be. But, you know, I think what's exciting is that, you know, zero trust, which we talked about, was something that was coming slowly. And then 2020 hit and really accelerated that. And I think people are going to deploy that very widely. And I think that it will make a significant impact on not only the security of corporate systems, but also the ease of use, because people will be able to do their work from wherever they need to. And that's definitely needed. The pandemic isn't going anywhere for months. And so yeah, I think zero trust is probably the order of the day. I also think personal privacy will be an area which is very significant for all of us through 2021 and beyond.
And Cloudflare can contribute, right?
I hope so.
Thank you so much for your participation in our podcast. So many topics, interesting topics to talk about, really. So thank you, John.
Great. Lovely talking to you as well.
Este podcast foi criado por mim, João Tomé, e é editado pelo Stoffel. Pode enviar sugestões de temas ou de convidados para os próximos episódios para o meu Twitter. Estou em @imote. Lá também encontra um formulário para poder preencher para nos dar algum feedback sobre este podcast. Se gostou do que ouviu, siga-nos nas principais plataformas de podcast e, se gostou mesmo, avalie-nos e passe a palavra. Até ao próximo episódio de Made in Tech, do Dinheiro Vivo.